I'd like to take this time to thank listener Sarah Graham.
Inventor of the Graham cracker.
Inventor of the Graham cracker. I believe she feeds it to her two ferrets.
No, she's not the inventor of the Graham cracker. She's the inventor of the Sarah cracker.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. My mistake. Yeah. Well, yeah, I was confused because it was Graham Sarah who invented the Graham cracker.
There
correct.
You go.
Yeah.
What I hear is that she raises money for her favorite podcast by performing sideshows on the arid plains of Saskatchewan with her two ferrets.
I wonder what her favorite podcast is. That's probably a good one. Not like this one.
I assume it's Mark Maron or something.
Yeah.
Welcome to Arid Plainsvale.
What do we imagine her two ferrets do in the sideshows?
Oh,
I assume they eat each other.
Really?
Like the worm Ouroboros.
Oh, they just like
Ouroboros, yeah.
Grab each other's tail in their mouth and then become this endless circle or whatever.
I was thinking improv comedy.
Oh, yeah?
Can I have something you wouldn't want to eat in a household? Nothing? Yeah, we're ferrets.
They're always ferreting out things.
Yeah.
Information sometimes.
I guess they could be the opposite of a contortionist, right? You know? Because ferrets are kind of like can squeeze into small spaces.
That's right. So instead their special ability is to stand there and not squeeze into things and be super stiff.
Yeah, just like ta-da, just at all times.
That's what makes them entertaining.
Yes.
And now exactly. I will not fit through this small hole.
Forget everything you thought you knew about ferrets, people. Trigger alert! Trigger alert! In this podcast, the hosts make light of serious situations that happen in real life. This may or may not include sexual assault. If you expect these topics will make you feel uncomfortable, we urge you to press stop and listen to some other episode of Caustic Soda. Thanks.
I don't get it. Who doesn't hate crime? I'm Kevin Leeson.
Do what you hate. The money will follow. I'm Torin Atkinson.
Sometimes hate crimes can be a real drag. I'm Joe Foljam, and this is Caustic Soda.
Bam!
The word hate comes from Proto-Germanic haton, or I don't know how to.
Because he got your hate on?
That's totally it.
Uh-huh.
They were way more radical back in Proto-Germany.
Yeah, get your hate on.
You should just not put your hat on?
I hate
this hat. This hat is terrible. I don't want to put my hat on. I hat on it.
Or maybe you're only allowed to hate people when you wear that hat. I hate that guy. Put your hating hat on.
Go ahead and leave your hate on.
From the Proto-Indo-European, and I've noticed we've said pre-Indo-European. I'm guilty of this, and then I realized. And I think we've corrected ourselves once before. So I think when you say ourselves, you mean you,
because I've never made that mistake.
Okay. Cad, meaning sorrow or hatred.
Luckily, there's no way for me to check that I've made that mistake.
While attacks on others have occurred throughout history, the term hate crime came into use after World War II, though one of my sources actually said it didn't show up until 1988 as the earliest use of the term. It seems to me that it started being used in the mid to late 70s, actually, but very difficult to find this stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
Phobia. Xenophobia is the fear of strangers or foreigners.
Right.
Of course.
And warrior princes.
Sources.
Warrior princesses.
Xenophobia.
Yeah. Fear of warrior princesses.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very silly fear to have.
Uh-huh.
Not because they're not badass, but because they're awesome.
No, it totally makes sense. They're very slashy.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Mm. Of course, as sources of hate crimes, there's homophobia, Islamophobia, transphobia, all sorts of stuff. Fear tends to be a pretty good motivator for hate.
Mm-hmm.
In both crime and law, hate crime, also known as bias-motivated crime, is a usually violent, prejudice-motivated crime that occurs when a perpetrator targets a victim because of their perceived membership in a certain social group.
Okay.
So examples of such groups include, but are not limited to, ethnicity, gender identity, language, nationality, physical appearance, religion, or sexual orientation.
Got it.
Ethnicity, gender identity, language, nationality,
correct.
Physical appearance,
mm-hmm.
religion, sexual orientation.
That's a wide swath.
It is. So here's some things we're not going to be talking about, because a lot of the stuff that might be considered a hate crime, or I think even definitely would be considered a hate crime,
would fall under the umbrella
if you go wide enough, is stuff we've either covered before or that we're probably going to do whole shows on as well. So things that we're not really going to concentrate on, but we will mention racism, homophobia, and transphobia, certainly as sources for the hate crimes we're going to talk about them. We're not going to talk about the reason for them or in depth
Because there's more to be talked about.
Yeah, I think there may be an episode about just a broad LGBT phobia at some point.
Got it.
Lynchings are going to get their own show.
As well they should.
Or maybe hangings.
Mm-hmm. Or hangings.
Lynchings and hangings.
Lynchings and hangings.
All sorts of hangings.
Yeah. Genocide, we've already done. And similar ethnic-on-ethnic violence we're going to be avoiding, including pogroms or state-sanctioned violence, which includes the Nazi treatment of gays and Jews during World War II.
Yeah, and we have touched on those in episodes like Stalin and Hitler and whatnot.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I know what a pog is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know what Rom Space Night is. But what's a pogrom?
It's a bottle cap shaped thing with the image of Rom the Space Knight engraved in it.
Pogrom is a riot aimed at persecution of a particular group, usually on the basis of their religion or ethnic origin.
Well, that's totally different than what I thought.
We're also not really going to talk too much about gender-based hate. I certainly think that, you know, attacking women for being women is a hate crime. Mm-hmm. But again, that's another thing that we can save for its own show because there's so much of it. So what we're talking about, distilled down, is when a person or a small group of people hates another person for who they are, and then harms them. Because I'm not going to cover all that much in the way of nonviolent hate crimes, which are hate crimes.
Yep.
But this is caustic soda, so we're going to talk about the worst of the worst.
Got it.
And Corey found this for me. It's pretty difficult to track down explanations for why human beings hate other people for these kind of traits.
Well, yeah, because most of it is probably cultural, right? Like that you just grew up and everybody you knew hated a certain ethnicity or kind of person or whatever.
I assume it's all just tribalism.
It is. And it's also one of the key things I found out in the research for this is that it's learned. You don't get born hating people who are different from you. You put a white baby next to a black baby and they'll be just fine. Right.
Right.
They'll like each other. But you raise that kid up to hate black kids and he'll then hate him.
Mm-hmm.
So the hatred of difference is instilled in people.
Well, hold on a sec. I mean, do we necessarily know this for sure? Because babies don't have language skills or a whole lot of physical skills.
Mobility.
Right.
Mobility and whatnot. So maybe they're just like, maybe babies really do hate. And then
if only they could crawl out of those cribs by themselves.
That's right. If only they could, you know, yell a Sieg Heil or whatever.
You'd use your little mobile above the crib to do a lynching.
So the argument is that by the time they're able to move and strike each other, they've learned to cover it up.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
They have, you know, learned obfuscation.
Yeah, that's a hypothesis you could get some research grants
for. Oh, you said you think there's no such thing as sudden infant death syndrome. You think it's babies killing babies.
Oh, of course. We're blowing the lid off of this thing.
Sudden infant hate crime syndrome.
Yeah.
Baby on baby violence.
Yeah. But maybe they're not that discerning. Like, they'll just hate another baby for, you know, his eyebrows.
Oh, yeah.
Or the type of soother he liked. He liked the opaque soother. I only like the translucent ones.
Some babies are born without hair. Skinhead babies.
Oh, my God. Corey,
they're literally skinheads.
How we hate in our brain. Thanks to Corey for finding this. Researchers are on the hunt for the neurological underpinnings of hatred using functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI, to reveal how strong emotion starts to emerge in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Neurobiologist Simir Zeki of University College London's Laboratory of Neurobiology led a study that scanned the brains of 17 adults as they gazed at images of a person they professed to hate.
Whoa. Oh, so you had to start the study by saying you hated people.
Yeah, you had to say that they're somebody you hated.
So the only picture, if I was in this study, the only picture they'd be able to show me is Joe.
Oh,
right.
And just Joe over and over again.
Yeah,
just get more and more enraged.
Oh. Across the board, areas in the medial frontal gyrus, right putamen, premotor cortex, and medial insula activated.
Okay.
Parts of this so-called hate circuit, the researchers noted, are also involved in initiating aggressive behavior, but feelings of aggression itself, as well as anger, danger, and fear, show different patterns in the brain than hatred does.
Hate circuit, the little scene follow-up to Short Circuit 2.
Hate circuit.
It was the horror one where the robot went evil and started killing everybody.
They kept it under wraps. It's like locked up in a vault somewhere.
Kill all humans. Number 5 is alive. You will not be. Hatred activates areas in the frontal cortex that may be involved in evaluating another person and predicting their behavior.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some commonalities with love, however, are striking. The areas of the putamen and insula that are activated by individual hate are the same as those for romantic love.
Wow.
This linkage may account for why love and hate are so closely linked to each other in life.
If I hate Stephen Harper, I may actually love Stephen Harper.
Well, it's very similar to loving him, yeah, except the thing that fires in your brain that's different seems to be the part that's really good at analyzing and figuring people out, that you start judging them better, mm-hmm. and that actually kind of turns off when you feel love for them.
Right.
So it's harder to actually judge people negatively when you feel love for them, and when you hate somebody, you all of a sudden become super critical.
Love is blind, but hate is...
Hate is wide, eyes is wide open, as long as it continues to hate.
But it's these powerful emotions use the same pathways.
Yeah, yeah, same areas of the brain in a lot of ways. Different in a lot of ways, too.
One of our favorite TV series, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, touched on this briefly when they talked about fear boners.
Yeah, I've never had one.
I've never had a fear boner either, but it's funny to think that that might actually exist in the world.
When a bear is attacking you,
mm-hmm.
you could, maybe you could stab him in the eye in self-defense.
That is the only reason I would think that your body would do that. I would think the opposite would happen. Fear would happen and your body would go, well, we don't need blood down there. It needs to go to other places more important.
No. It's like one of those lizards, like flaring its gills or whatever, you know? You know, you just got kind of, you got to intimidate the other person by, I'm the alpha dog here. Check out my wang.
How much bigger do you think your body gets when that engorges with blood? It's not that much.
Oh, the rest of me shrinks.
Yeah.
Because it's so huge.
It's just one big dick.
It's like desiccate.
I am so confident I will win this fight. I am having a boner.
Yes.
I'm weakening myself because I'm going to destroy you.
Yeah, it's blowing up like a helium balloon. I'll float away with it.
I've got some facts about hate crimes here.
Mm-hmm.
Hate crimes are any crime where bias, prejudice, or bigotry is a motivating factor.
Mm-hmm.
This is from the United States. 6,222 hate crime incidents involving 7,254 offenses were reported in 2011.
There were more offenses than incidents? What does that mean?
So the incident get more means offenses in
more people. So an incident could have more than one one offense in it.
Right.
So you could, like, attack three people.
Or,
okay, I will.
Or you could attack the same person three times, once verbally.
Oh.
Once emotionally.
Those are all incidents.
Those are all crimes.
Yeah, these are all
physically.
These are all not necessarily violent hate crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are actually property damage. You know, people, Jews go home, spray painting on walls.
Right,
like
right.
Out of the 6,216 crimes reported, 47% were racially motivated.
Okay.
21% resulted from sexual orientation bias.
Uh-huh.
20% were motivated by religious bias. 12% stemmed from ethnicity and national origin bias. And less than 1% was prompted by disability bias. Because you would have to be supremely broken to fucking hate blind people.
Wheelchairies go home.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming in the religious bias that it's pretty much Buddhists doing all the hate criming, right?
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
So race is almost twice as reported hate crimes than any other.
Well, race is obviously a visual signifier, right? Like if you're not white, that's pretty obvious. Whereas if you're gay, that might not necessarily be obvious to people around you. As well, there are less gay people in the States than there are non-white or of different races.
What if I... Has anyone been hate-crimed because they were a disabled, ethnic, religious, sexual orientation race?
So a...
Maybe.
A Jewish woman in a wheelchair who is a lesbian and black.
That's the one.
So then you can't figure out which hate crime it is. You have a tough time zeroing in.
Oh, that would be just terrible because that's really important.
And here's how I know that the Buddhists are the the big religious hate crimers. Because Buddha is the original skinhead.
Okay.
You know?
And skin belly.
Oh, maybe that's where he keeps all the hate. Every hour in the United States, somebody commits a hate crime. Why don't they lock that guy up? At least 8 black people, 3 white people, 3 gay people, 3 Jewish people, and 1 Latino person become a hate crime victim every day.
There's hate crimes against white people? This is outrageous.
Yeah. Half of all the hate crimes in the nation are committed by people between the ages of 15 and 24.
Okay.
Hate crimes stem from a learned behavior of hatred because inherent hate for a whole group of people for no particular reason other than one's own bias is not something people are born with.
In theory.
In theory, with lots of evidence. And Kevin's got a guess. Every week in the United States, somewhere a cross is burned.
On purpose or by accident?
I'm guessing on purpose.
Oh, no, I burned.
burn I'm my guessing, cross.
I'm guessing as a threat.
Get the fire extinguisher. No, well, you're I put always, it too close you're to
always,
the stove.
You're always cleaning your cross with like paint thinner, right? Which is highly flammable. Right? You know, like you want
to
get
and then you just put that magnifying glass next to it on a sunny day.
Well, it gets greasy. It gets greasy because you use it to like loosen your tires when you need to rotate them. Like right. It's a very, you know, the crucifix is all encompassing. So, you know, you
got a million household uses.
A million household uses. It's like the Swiss Army knife of religious symbology.
Ew. Yeah. While race is the leader for the number of hate crimes, the danger of being a victim of a hate crime is actually quite a bit different, the numbers on that. In the USA, which is the place where, again, we've got the best data on this, violent hate crimes, that's what I'm looking at here, are far more likely to target LGBT people with 35.6 attacks per 100,000 people compared to 13.9 for Muslim, 11.2 for Black, 7.8 Jewish, 5.5 Aboriginal, 2.9 Hispanic, 1.8 Asian or Pacific Islander, and 0.7 for white. Overall, there's less crimes against them, but it's a much higher percentage of those people being attacked.
That is assuming that you can accurately guess how many LGBT people are out there, because there are some that won't be out of the closet necessarily.
Right, exactly. This is all about, this has to be self-reported.
Self-identified.
There's a whole bunch of problems with this that the FBI has some research on this showing that a wide amount of hate crimes are just simply not reported because people think there's going to be reprisals. They think that the law enforcement doesn't care, that they think there's nothing to be done.
Well, there is some probably historical evidence to support that perhaps law enforcement might not necessarily care that much about certain groups.
Right.
Now, BT stands for likable, generic, boring, and typical.
lesbian, gay, bi, and transgendered.
Well, Torrens did start with likable, so not a hate crime.
Although I think somebody could argue that diminishing the hate against them could be a crime.
Oh, no, I did it.
Yeah. Way to go,
Torrens. The first hate crime of the episode. It was for me.
Oh, I'm sure people have been hating on me since minute one, so...
Oh, you think all the listeners count?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. We're creating hate crimes even as we speak with bad jokes.
Let's go straight into the history.
Jesu Domine.
Well, 4 days after the events of 9/11, Frank Silva Roque, R-O-Q-U-E, a Boeing aircraft mechanic at a local repair facility, reportedly told friends and a waitress at a local Applebee's that he was going to go out and shoot some towel heads, quote-unquote.
Applebee hatin'.
Problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Roque drove to a gas station owned by Balbir Singh Sodhi, an Indian immigrant. Roque shot Sodhi 5 times from his truck with a handgun, killing him as Sodhi was helping landscaper Luis Ledesma plant flowers around the edge of his gas station.
So they're planting flowers. God. Like, could you find a more helpless victim?
Yeah.
You know, doing the most it's not even benign. It's actually like improving the neighborhood.
Right.
Right. And not only that, he's not an Arab. He's an Indian.
Yep.
No. Roque, just brown people. He's just driving around for brown people.
Roque, who apparently wanted revenge for September 11th, mistook him for an Arab because of the clothes he wore, his turban, and his beard.
Not that it would have been any better had he actually been Arabic.
No, like, of course not.
What are there, 1.5 billion Muslims in the world?
But if you're going to hate...
12 of them flew into a building?
If you're going to commit a hate crime, you should probably commit it against the people that you purportedly hate.
Well, it just shows how mentally deficient people who hate other people are, I think. Hate's not rational.
But think of the kind of rep the KKK would have gotten if they'd been out, like, you know, lynching Irish people, right? You know? Because then, like, just missing the target entirely.
I think more appropriately be like chimney sweeps because they're all covered in soot.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
You know, I think we've got a KKK comedy movie in the makes right here.
Oh, God.
Where they accidentally kill a chimney sweep and then have to cover it up. And it's a whole wacky comedy of errors.
Well, you know, you don't call it a KKK comedy. You call it a KK comedy and comedy spelled with a K.
Yes, of course.
And the main character is a stutterer.
Oh, God.
We've got to cover this up.
20 minutes after the first shooting, he shot a Lebanese-American clerk from his truck, but missed. Roque then drove to his former residence, which had been purchased by a local Afghan family, and fired multiple rounds at the outside of the house.
Mm-hmm.
After fleeing from the final shooting, Roque was reported to have gone to a local bar and boasted that they're investigating the murder of a turban head down the street. The police arrested Roque the next day. He reportedly shouted slogans including, "I am a patriot! I stand for America all the way!" during his arrest.
Got it.
Defense attorneys argued he was not guilty due to insanity, claiming that he had a diminished IQ. Oh, he's just dumb.
Yeah.
He can't be held accountable for his crimes. He's just an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And heard relentless voices telling him that Arabs were satanic and must be killed. Two co-workers testified that Roque was, quote, narrow-minded, end quote, and that he hated both immigrants and Arabs.
Isn't that narrow-minded is kind of what you need to commit a hate crime?
I would think so, yeah.
Roque's defense attorney characterized him as mentally ill and noted that his mother had twice been hospitalized for schizophrenia, a condition which has been shown to appear in those genetically predisposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
Roque was found guilty of first-degree murder.
Thank goodness.
And was sentenced to death nine days later. The Arizona Supreme Court changed Roque's death sentence to a sentence of life in prison without parole, citing low IQ and mental illness as mitigating factors.
They cannot execute people with diminished mental capacity unless they're black.
Yeah.
I can't cite the studies off the top of my head, but there's a pretty broad base of academia that has shown that African Americans are executed at a far higher rate than any other ethnicity. Even though the people being prosecuted with possible death sentences at the end of it is kind of equal, that they get that the African Americans get the death penalty far more often, and it's carried out far more often.
Speaking of that, I actually have a hate crime from 1998 against an African American.
Mm-hmm.
In June of 1998, James Byrd, age 49, accepted a ride from Sean Berry, age 24, Lawrence Russell Brewer, and John King. I'm going to give a violence warning for this. This gets pretty gruesome. So if you can't handle gruesome gore, I don't know why you're listening to Caustic Soda, but if that's your trigger, then look out.
But I am pretty sure that I heard this story because back when it actually happened, made a lot of headlines.
Right. And it's actually had some lasting effects, which we'll get to. Barry, who was driving, was acquainted with Bird from around town. Instead of taking Bird home, the three men took Bird to a remote county road out of town, beat him severely, urinated on him and chained him by his ankles to their pickup truck before dragging him for approximately 1.5 miles. Brewer claimed that Bird's throat had been slashed by Barry before he was dragged. However, forensic evidence suggests that Bird had been attempting to keep his head up while being dragged, and an autopsy suggested that Bird was alive during much of the dragging.
Their defense was, hey, listen, we did more damage to him than you think before we started dragging him behind the truck.
Yeah. So I think that was an attempt to say, don't worry, he was dead when we did the totally horrible thing to him.
Right.
But
Although killing him prior to dragging him would also be a totally horrible thing.
Right. But
when they could have just said, hey, we found this dead guy chained to the back of our truck when we got into it, and we didn't want to take him off, and we just decided to just drive around.
Kind of like getting keyed in the parking lot. You're like, I got a scratch on the side of my car. I don't know how it got here. They were out in the woods. They came back to their truck, found a guy chained to the bumper. So they just, all right, let's drag him into town to leave him at his place of residence. We'll give him a ride back into town off the back bumper of our vehicle. So they're the Samaritans here. We're giving him a ride back into town. But he's already dead, so we didn't need to put him inside the truck.
That's what they could have done.
Yes, if they were smarter. Wait, they got diminished mental capacity. No death sentences.
Shockingly. Bird died after his right arm and head were severed when his body hit a culvert.
Oh.
Yeah, that'll do it. Culverts will do that to you.
Bird's brain and skull were found intact, further suggesting he maintained consciousness while being dragged.
Mm-hmm.
So he's dragged to his death for 1.5 miles until he hit a culvert arm and head came off.
I bet you it felt like a lot longer than 1.5 miles.
How long does it take to drive 1.5 miles?
Depends how fast you're going. Although if you're going fast
enough.
Oh, is
that a factor?
I guess if you're going fast enough to sever a guy's arm and head against a culvert, you're probably going pretty fast.
If you're going 60 miles, it's 1.5 minutes.
Yeah,
60 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because that's a mile a minute.
That is a long time.
Would have felt a lot longer.
Barry, Brewer, and King dumped the mutilated remains of the body in front of an African-American church.
Oh, wow.
Then drove off to a barbecue.
Well, they probably thought that he was going to get buried there, so they were cutting out the middleman. No need for the funeral home to get involved. Just take him straight to the cemetery.
Along the area where Bird was dragged, police found a wrench with Barry written on it. They also found a lighter.
My hate crime wrench.
It's my hate and wrench. He uses it to crank up his hate. He's got a hate valve.
Yeah.
Right. And he needs to like bleed the hate valve every once in a while. You know, so that and he tried to bleed his hate valve, and the other guy blood got on it.
No, counterclockwise. Yeah, oh no, it's too late.
Too much blood.
They also found a lighter that was inscribed with Possum, which was King's prison nickname.
Mm. Uh huh. So they didn't. The police didn't think that possums had committed the crime.
Right. No, because not many possums own lighters. I think that was the reason for that.
Is that why possums haven't taken over the world yet?
The following morning, birds' limbs were found scattered across a seldom-used road.
What? I thought they were on the African-American church.
No, the head and the arm were left to the culvert.
No, the body was dumped.
Oh, they found the parts that were still chained to the back
made it to the church.
Right, I got it.
The police found 81 places that were littered with birds' remains.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just a note on how racist King was. He had several racist tattoos, a black man hanging from a tree, Nazi symbols, the words Aryan Pride, and the patch for a gang of white supremacist inmates known as the Confederate Knights of America.
Mm. Got it.
So this was a full-on Aryan racist shithead.
Yeah.
In a jailhouse letter to Brewer that was intercepted by jail officials, King expressed pride in the crime and said that he realized while committing the murder that he might have to die. Regardless of the outcome of this, we have made history. Death before dishonor. Sig Heil, King wrote.
So he speaks German, so he's not that dumb.
Parrots can learn how to say Sig Heil.
Mm-hmm.
Barry, Brewer, and King were tried and convicted for Bird's murder. Brewer and King received the death penalty while Barry was sentenced to life in prison. Mm-hmm. Brewer was executed by lethal injection on September 21st, 2011, and King remains on Texas's death row.
Good times.
So that same year, 1998, in October, Matthew Shepard met Aaron McKinney, who's then 22, and Russell Henderson, then 21, at the Fireside Lounge in Laramie, Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
McKinney and Henderson pretended to be gay to lure Shepard to their truck.
Oh.
Pretended.
Right.
And doesn't that go against the Geneva Convention?
Heavily ergo.
You're not allowed to pretend to be gay?
To lure gay people to their death?
Well, I would think to lure them to their death, uh-huh. for sure. After befriending Shepard, they took him to a remote area outside of Laramie where they robbed him, tied him to a fence with a rope from McKinney's truck, and tortured him while beating him with the butt of a pistol while Shepard pleaded for his life.
I'm guessing when by robbing, they didn't mean he made out with a guy named Rob.
No, I think they mean took his stuff.
Mm. I've never heard that use of the word robbing before, right. Kevin.
Okay. Game of Thrones readers think robbing means a completely different thing, having to do with weddings and them going horribly awry.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Rob Roy.
the drink?
That is another Rob.
Uh-huh.
He got robbed.
Of his life?
And then Royd.
It was reported that Shepard was beaten so brutally that his face was completely covered in blood, except where it had been partially washed clean by his tears.
The cleansing power of tears. Mm.
McKinney and Henderson discovered Shepard's address and intended to steal from his home as well. Still tied to the fence, Shepard, who was in a coma, was discovered 18 hours later by a cyclist who initially mistook him for a scarecrow.
Oh, wow.
Shepard had suffered fractures to the back of his head and in front of his right ear. He experienced severe brainstem damage, which affected his body's ability to regulate his heart rate, body temperature, and other vital functions.
Yeah, I need the stem to my brain.
His injuries were deemed too severe for doctors to operate. Shepard never regained consciousness and remained on full life support.
Mm-hmm.
He was pronounced dead 6 days later. He was 21 years old. Now, these two are actually related because 11 years after this, President Barack Obama signed the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act.
Only took 11 years.
The measure expands the 1969 United States federal hate crime law to include crimes motivated by a victim's actual or perceived gender, sexual orientation, gender identity, or disability.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So those weren't covered up until 2009.
What if a disabled person is a total dick? Is it okay to hate them then?
Well, you're allowed to hate people for like reasonable reasons.
Okay.
So the 1969 one basically only included skin color, race.
I believe so, yeah. So the mm-hmm. bill also removed the prerequisite that the victim be engaging in a federally protected activity like voting or going to school.
Oh, okay.
So it only covered you can't hate people while they're doing this stuff.
Right.
Yeah. It gives federal authorities greater ability to engage in hate crimes investigations that local authorities choose not to pursue.
Right.
So a local authority could go, this looks like a hate crime. Let's call the FBI now.
Or they
this.
Can say, yeah, this isn't a hate crime. We're not going to do anything about it. And then the FBI can go, no, we're pretty sure it's a hate crime.
Yeah, that too.
And you're perpetrating another hate crime by not pursuing this hate crime. you're liking hate crime, which is not good. So yep. The feds jumping in.
It was the first federal law to extend legal protection to transgender people, which leads into 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Angie Zapata was a trans woman living openly as one since she was 16 years old from Greeley, Colorado. When she was 18, she met Alan Andrade, who was 31 at the time, through the mobile phone social network.
Mm-hmm.
According to Andrade, the two met on July 15th, 2008, and spent nearly 3 days together, during which they had a sexual encounter.
Mm-hmm.
Prosecutors state that Andrade later discovered that Zapata was transgender and subsequently began beating her, first with his fists and then with a fire extinguisher.
Oof.
Until she was dead.
Mm.
In the arrest after...
He should have sprayed himself with the fire extinguisher and extinguished his hate.
If only
his
we
rage.
Had... Can we get those fire... Can we get hate extinguishers?
Hate extinguishers?
Yeah. What would a hate extinguisher have inside of it?
Weed, man.
Oh, there you
tons,
go.
Tons of weed vapor.
Just this huge cone of weed vapor in your face.
I think also bunnies. Small bunnies would jump out.
Oh. And bunnies, yeah.
Thump, 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 thump. They're so cute. Or puppies. Puppies and kittens. Puppies and kittens.
Bunnies, and they start attacking each other. Aww.
Yeah,
this was poorly designed.
They can't do any harm to each other because they don't have any claws or teeth yet.
Puppies. You're too busy trying to separate the animals from then hating people.
Yeah.
Puppies, bunnies, kittens, and weed sounds like a fantastic Sunday afternoon.
In
the arrest affidavit, Andrade said he thought he had, quote, killed it before leaving in Zapata's car with the murder weapon and other incriminating evidence.
Ah, leaving in the car of the person you just murdered.
Yeah.
Bad tactic.
Yeah.
Mentally diminished.
No death penalty.
Andrade was arrested near his residence driving Zapata's car.
Mm-hmm.
The possibility of prosecuting the case as a hate crime was pressed by Zapata's family. During the trial, the jury heard jailhouse conversations in which Andrade told a girlfriend that, quote, gay things must die.
And by gay, he meant happy, right?
Yes, jolly.
He
just meant, you know, overjoyed people.
That's right.
Angie
Nobody who
Zapata,
has sex with me should have a smile on their face.
Angie Zapata loved life a little too much.
I had sex with her, and she was smiling. So I killed her because hate is the only thing I like.
He wasn't used to anybody smiling after sex with him. Yeah, it was a... So he was out of his element. He didn't know how to react.
Right.
Just fists started flying.
Andrade was found guilty of first-degree murder, hate crimes, aggravated motor vehicle theft, and identity theft. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Oh, how ironic is it that he stole the identity of a transgendered person?
Yeah.
Basically making himself a transgendered person.
I'm guessing that meant that he took the credit cards and tried to use them to buy things.
Yes,
that
would mean. Exactly. Saying, I am Angie Zapata.
Yeah.
This transgendered person, this is me now.
Is it a sin? Is it a crime? Loving you, dear. Maybe I'm wrong, dreaming of you, dreaming the lonely night through. If it's a crime, then I'm guilty, guilty of dreaming of you. What can I do? What can I say after I've taken the blame? You say you're through, you'll go your way, but I'll always feel just the same. Maybe I'm right, maybe. Loving you, dear, like I do. If it's a crime, then I'm guilty. Guilty of loving you.
We'll be right back.
Hey, you? Did you hear about the Lesser of Two Evils marathon that we, the staff of Caustic Soda, recorded with some of Vancouver's funniest comics at the Seven Dining Lounge here in Vancouver? It was great. If you were not able to attend this live show, you can still listen to it by downloading it from causticgear.com. Now, we're releasing it as a pay what you want. So that could be a dollar, that could be $1 million, or if you want, it could be no dollars. If you don't have any dollars whatsoever, or if you just don't like us and want to protest. But hey, if you like it, tell your friends.
In the news, October 2010, a homophobic group of youths calling themselves the Latin King Goonies.
Because they love that movie.
Picked up a 17-year-old boy who had expressed interest in joining their gang and took him to an abandoned apartment and asked him if he'd had sex with a 30-year-old man known locally as La Reina.
La Reina.
The Queen.
Oh, they don't like him, I guess.
I think that's a disparaging comment on his sexual orientation, perhaps.
Well, he might like it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but for coming from a Latin King Goonie. I wonder if they're the Latin King Goonies because they kind of look like that, you know, freakish-looking dude from the movie.
Is it Chunk?
What's his name? Snog?
Chunk?
Yeah. Yes, sure, Chunk.
That's no, better. Chunk is the fat kid.
Oh, yeah. Chunk is...
Dumpy. Quasimodo.
Pog.
Pirate.
The teenage boy said that he had had sex with the man, so was beaten, made to strip naked. He was slashed with a box cutter.
Ouch.
Listen, being slashed with a box cutter is bad enough. Being slashed with a box cutter when you're naked... That is really bad because you don't know where that slash is coming next. And by slash, I mean he's getting felt up by the, you know, guitarist from Guns N' Roses.
Oh, God.
With a box cutter.
He was slashed with a box cutter, hit on the head with a can of beer.
No.
But here's the thing. Those like, frat boys do that in those movies all the time. So that doesn't sound particularly, like, torturing.
No, it's hilarious.
And then they sodomized him with the wooden handle of a toilet plunger.
That did not happen in Animal House.
No, that did not.
Well, the deleted scenes, you know. Director's cut was a lot darker.
The Goonies set him loose, warning him to keep quiet or they'd hurt his friends and family.
Naming your cool gang the Goonies...
I'm hoping that they're up to more than just homophobia. Because a gang is usually centers around, like, drug dealing and, you know, illicit activity that makes money for them, like robbing and all the rest of this stuff. But if their whole thing is homophobia, I don't know where the profit is in that.
That just means that they're all in the closet and self-loathing.
Ah.
That's what we've learned from conservative lawmakers, haven't we?
There is a lot of conservative lawmakers in bathrooms in Minnesota.
They should form a gang.
What would they call themselves?
Rethuglicans.
Oh, yeah. The group then grabbed a second 17-year-old boy, beating and likewise interrogating him about his contact with the 30-year-old La Reina. He, too, said that he had had sex with the man. But this also comes to that whole thing. When you're interrogating somebody and beating and torturing them at the same time,
right?
I mean, it's pretty commonly known that they basically tell you whatever you want to hear.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a possibility that neither of these boys had sex with this man.
Do you think that this man even exists?
Oh, no, he does.
Wait till the story continues on.
Okay.
Oh, you thought he might have just been a figment of their imagination, like Sasquatch or whatever?
Maybe, yeah.
I am completely unsurprised that people who would be so riddled with homophobia don't also understand that torture doesn't get results.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
Or it gets a result.
Well, not accurate results.
An accurate result.
Yeah.
The second boy also admitted that he had had sex with the man, so they took his jewelry and held him while the 30-year-old La Reina arrived for what he thought was a party.
Oh.
With 10 tall cans of Four Loko.
Four Loko. What's a Four Loko?
It's a caffeine-infused malt liquor, if you must know.
Okay.
Caffeinated beer, basically.
Oh, okay.
Well, it has higher alcohol content, like 10 or 12%, so it's got more Loko than just beer.
It's got Four Loko.
Yeah.
So 10 or 12%, that's like, was that twice what a beer
twice
normally
to double,
is?
Because American beers...
Twice to double, he said.
twice to triple is what I meant. Twice to double, yeah. Because American beers have between like 3.5% and 5%
okay.
alcohol. It's anywhere between 12 and a dozen.
Right on that line.
You're going to anywhere between 2 and the square root of 4 times as much.
La Reina was immediately set upon and tied up. The teenager... who was already in a captivity, was ordered to join the Goonies in attacking him, the beating lasting several hours. The attackers forced the man to drink all 10 cans of Four Loko.
I've never had 10 cans of even regular beer.
But so, here's the thing. If you're beating and torturing somebody, you make him drink 10 cans of powerful malt liquor, you're actually going to numb him to the pain. You're going to help him weather the storm.
Right.
Which means that you can beat him even more badly and not feel as bad about it, I guess.
I don't know. Do you think if you're forced feeding someone beer, like how much is like spillage that goes out the side of your mouth?
But if, here's the thing. Yeah. If it's 10 cans of liquor and they're all about twice the size of a regular can of beer because they're tall cans and they have about twice the amount of booze.
Double to triple.
That's 40 cans of beer. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of liquor, even with spillage.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you drank half that amount.
20 cans, man.
That would be a lot of beer. Somewhat, you have a slight buzz.
I think it probably pushes you towards alcohol poisoning that much.
While the man was held captive and attacked, five of the Goonies went to his house, which he shared with his brother. They found his brother in bed, who refused the demands for money. One placed a cell phone to his ear where he heard the voice of La Reina, who said he'd been kidnapped and pleaded, "Give them the money." The brother gave them about $1,000 in cash, two debit cards, and a 52-inch television.
Mm. So this is where the money-making comes in.
I want to know if this was thought of ahead of time or if they just went, well, we're fucking horrible criminals now. We might as well take his stuff.
Well, they beat and tortured two 17-year-olds with no payoff whatsoever.
Right.
So I think the beatings
are labor of love with a little gravy on top. That's
right.
What you're saying.
Sure. That's right. That's
I mean, a labor of hate.
Yeah.
Labor of hate.
That's what the words I meant to use.
The older brother managed to free himself 3 hours later when he called the police, but he left out the fact that his brother was being held captive. When detectives arrived at the scene of the crime, they found the 30-year-old passed out on the landing from the alcohol he had consumed. Having no reason to believe he'd been the victim of a crime, they did not question him.
So
it's an odd part of the story.
It really is. Like, okay, you see a guy passed out in probably this is low-income housing.
A little bloodied.
He's at least beaten and bloodied.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, all the victims were tracked down and officers obtained a search warrant. When they entered the abandoned apartment where the beating took place, they found a surprising sight. An immaculate house with fresh coats of paint and the smell of bleach. One detective called the house the cleanest crime scene I've ever seen.
It's because they're in the wrong house.
Lots of bleach and paint were used to cover the bloodshed by the tortured prey. They even poured bleach down the drains. Mm. Rugs and linoleum had been ripped out. Detectives were able to scrape some evidence, including pubic hair and empty liquor cans, but not much was found.
Pubic hair is hard to get rid of, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. You can bleach and cut out carpets or whatever, and pubes are still left behind.
Have to go over there with a fine-tooth pube comb.
That's how they end up with the pubic hair in there in the first place. Eventually, all three victims gave accounts of the attack. The police rounded up the 9 assailants, and each one of them are now serving prison sentences from 7 to 14 years in length.
All right.
Yeah, I think their business model needs some work, like as far as a gang goes. Not only that, now that they're in prison, do they still go by the Goonies?
Mm.
Might get favorable treatment. People probably love that movie. People love that movie unreasonably.
I agree.
I like how this is now the discussion we're having.
It is not a good movie. It is not as good as some people make it out to be.
I feel we've had this conversation.
We've had this conversation before because I can't let it go. Every year there's somebody who says, oh, I love that movie. And I just cringe. And
do the members of the Latin Goonies?
Latin King Goonies.
Latin King Goonies. Do they all have their own favorite character and then they dress up like them?
Oh, one of them has to do the Truffle Shuffle, right?
I don't know anything about the movie.
That's when the fat kid pulls up his shirt and wiggles his fat stomach.
Oh, okay.
And when they call it the Truffle Shuffle.
Yes, they do.
That's weird.
Uh-huh.
Hold on.
Can we...
Hold on. Wait.
No!
Yeah. There you go.
Oh, God. Why? Why?
Animated GIF of the Truffle Shuffle. That's going up on causticsodapodcast.com.
Absolutely.
July 2014, Redding, California.
Redding.
Five suspects are facing hate crime charges for allegedly luring Hispanic victims through Facebook and robbing them. Two other suspects are still at large.
Uh-huh.
Margarita Santos of Chico went to Redding to meet with a woman he met on Facebook. When Santos arrived at a home, he was reportedly confronted by a group of people armed with a stun gun and a screwdriver.
Mm.
When he tried to flee, he was hit with the stun gun.
And then unscrewed.
And then unscrewed, or totally screwed, actually. Because you can not just unscrew with a screwdriver.
You can tighten up the screws.
You can totally screw people with a screwdriver.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does both. It's multifunction.
Mm-hmm. It's got a clockwise and a counterclockwise setting.
With the new screwdriver with dual action. The suspects allegedly held Santos against his will for more than 4 hours, stole his truck and ATM card, and forced him to tell them the card's PIN. The card was then used at several locations. Santos was able to escape at the Anderson Walmart and call police. Five suspects were arrested. Two other suspects, Lynette DeMello and Carissa Freeman, are still on the loose.
Slippery ladies.
Investigators said the suspects are also responsible for two other similar robberies.
Yeah, but this...
All three robberies are being treated as hate crimes because the victims appeared to be targeted based on being Hispanic, and the suspects reportedly made statements regarding white power and white pride. So they had decided, we're white, we're cool, we're going to rob people, let's rob people who aren't white. Let's get these Hispanic people.
Right.
And Corey found this, and she noted, because the investigation's ongoing, we should probably mention this, anyone with information regarding these robberies is asked to call Reading Police Department Investigations Division at 530-225-4214.
See, I hate a lot of white people, though, and I'm Caucasian myself.
But do you hate them because they're white? That's the key. That's the thing you seem to be forgetting.
See, my thing I can't let go is that there's a motivation part of it that I seem to be lacking.
I'm totally pro hate, to be honest. I think there's times when you have to pull hate out. There's things that are hateable.
Oh, sometimes I wish you put your hate away. Well, where do I cross the line from just regular hate to hate crime? Is there anybody that I anything any trait that anybody
there's
has
a good question.
That I hate as a result of it just being a thing?
Besides the Goonies.
Besides liking the Goonies.
So far, that's the top of the list.
You
for sure.
would probably tie James Cameron up to something and beat him for unobtainium.
No. Grammar crimes and lack of creativity when it comes to naming things in movies. That is definitely.
Oh, okay.
But
is that a hate crime or a pet peeve?
As soon as you commit a crime, it's a hate crime.
Yeah. Terrible directors. Would that qualify?
That's hating someone because of who they are.
I think it's because of what they do.
If I could get my hands on Michael Bay and Roland Emmerich, and I could just like knock their heads together like Three Stooges style, oh, that would make my decade.
Oh man, you would just cut off those heads, and like four more would grow in their place in Hollywood. Like people would be like, oh, Michael Bay got randomly killed by some angry guy. Here's four more of us to make a whole bunch of movies in his style.
Now he's become a martyr. We must make tribute movies to Transformers and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, can you imagine the tribute during the Oscar ceremony to Michael Bay with people like being like, yeah, he's dead, it's terrible, and like other people in the crowd going, biting their lips, why are we honoring this guy?
No, then I would go on a killing spree. Call back to our Killing Sprees episode, and I would like take all their heads and turn into one of those like things you put on your office desk where the balls knock into each other, and it's like a stress reliever.
Yeah.
And make it out of bad director heads with Michael Bay, the face of the bad directors, like coming at
you. Do you make him kiss each other? You arrange the heads so that they're facing each other.
Oh, that would probably like stop the momentum.
It would.
Yeah. Yeah, if only.
I feel like we should move straight into pop culture because of this, because you really want to talk about it. Kevin, you've seen American History X several times, I'm thinking.
I approve of it on the performance of Edward Norton, because I thought he was fantastic. He really communicated the dichotomy between his pre-jail and post-jail personalities.
For those who don't know, American History X is the story of two brothers who become involved in the neo-Nazi movement in California. After serving a prison sentence, the older brother changes his views and returns to save his younger brother from following the same path.
This is the movie where I learned out what curb stomping was.
Yes. This is where everybody learned what curb stomping
was. Holy cow,
I did not know what curb stomping... I just figured, you know, you would stomp somebody into the shape of a curb, maybe. Right? I'd heard the term, but I'd never seen it.
I'm going to stomp the curbs out of that guy.
Yeah. Edward Norton plays the older brother, and Edward Furlong plays the younger brother.
Uh-huh.
And this is a tale of two Edwards, because one of them is awesome, and the other one is awful.
One of them is a Terminator guy, John Connor.
I thought he was fine. I liked Edward Furlong in that movie. What didn't you like?
His performance, his face, his demeanor.
Well, I mean, sure, there's lots of people whose faces I don't like.
Uh-huh.
You hate him because of who he is.
No, he's just not a good actor.
Oh, okay.
He was the weak link in this film.
Okay.
And he spends a lot of time on screen, so it kind of detracts from the entire film.
Sure.
It's very appropriate for this episode.
Because of all the hate crimes?
Well, I mean, we go back to the curb stomping, which was...
Was it just the one?
Pretty graphic.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Whew, was it hard to watch. It's great filmmaking, right? Where, you know, you see just enough to give you the heebie-jeebies.
So you know exactly what's going on, but they don't show it.
Then the rest of it is sold in sound effect and intent.
Sound effects, for sure.
And my favorite transition in that entire movie is actually when Edward Norton is getting arrested right after the curb stomping. And they just, like, he's in super slow-mo getting led to the police car. He looks back at the crime scene, and he just has this big shit-eating grin.
His smirk.
And they put him in the cop car, and they cut directly to him in jail doing the laundry right next to his, like, black partner in jail. He's like, you turn the entire story on its head in, like, 1 second flat. And it was very well done. It was well-crafted storytelling, for sure.
Stacey Keach plays the kind of head neo-Nazi who recruits these guys.
The father figure.
Yeah. And
that all these boys are missing.
It's really cool that, like, you see the scenes where he's following him and believes in what he's talking about, and then the scenes later where he's changed his mind and there's arguments going on. And you can just see that I think the neo-Nazi guy he almost doesn't believe what he's talking about. He just wants to create an army that listens to him and does what he says.
I like this movie, but I think basically a better movie done in the same vein is Romper Stomper, which was an Australian neo-Nazi movie from the late 80s, early 90s. And it was the movie that made Russell Crowe the star he is.
Right.
Not to be confused with Romper Room.
Or
the polka dot door.
The short-lived children's show Romper Stomper Room.
Romper Stomper Room.
Right.
That created so many skinhead kids.
You put them in Doc Martens and tight jeans and red suspenders and have them goose step around and finger paint. It was finger paint swastikas. Yeah, Romper Stomper Room. But I would recommend to any listeners who haven't seen either Romper Stomper or American History X, I give a higher thumbs up to Romper Stomper. It's basically the exact same theme. He is a neo-Nazi pseudo leader who is trying to get out. He's no longer interested in, you know, the neo-Nazi lifestyle and all the difficulties that he has doing it. And guess what? He's got some really rad tattoos, just like Edward Norton's character did in American History X.
There you go.
Related to Romper Stomper, though, because I'd seen American History X and Romper Stomper before, in my research, one of the highly rated movies featuring hate crimes that I found out about was one I'd never even heard of before called This Is England.
Uh-huh.
It's a 2006 British drama film centering on young skinheads in England in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
It illustrates how their subculture, which has roots in the 1960s West Indian culture, especially ska, soul, and reggae music,
right,
became adopted by white nationalists, which led to divisions within the skinhead scene.
Skinhead schism.
Yeah,
Schism head?
It follows this young boy, I think he's about 12 years old, who is having a terrible life. His father is killed in the Falklands War. Everybody hates him. He gets picked on. And a group of skinheads kind of teases him, but one of them feels bad and starts to take care of him, and he joins them and becomes a young skinhead. An older skinhead named Combo returns to the group from being in prison and starts to really press his racist views on the group.
Right.
But they have a black guy in their group, and they all love soul and ska and reggae. They're the, you know, just the working class, like,
person. Like, they're skinheads to create an identity, but they don't necessarily have this racist ideology.
No, and they're punks. I mean, they do some vandalism and stuff. They're not exactly shining examples of humanity, but they don't, like, hate. Right?
Yeah.
But Combo returns and starts, like, just spouting about employment problems and how it's all these immigrants and stuff like that. And there's a split in the group and some shit goes down. It's really good.
Well, if we're going to the continent for our movies about hate, there's a French movie called La Haine, which actually translates into The Hate.
Oh.
The three main characters are immigrant kids who, you know, at one point in time in the movie get set upon by skinheads because they are, you know, from immigrant families. And, you know, there's a kind of that backlash in the 90s, both in Germany against the Turks and in France against, you know, the Africans that were immigrating to in large numbers due to strife in their own countries.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a spectacular movie. This is a really great film. If you can stand subtitles, and black and white,
which Joe can't either.
Yeah. I totally can.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I don't prefer it. Look, I will admit it. I prefer to have color in my movies. I prefer to be able to just hear it. But I'm not like a snob. I'll watch black and white. I'll read subtitles.
Maybe it's
that makes you an anti-snob.
Maybe it's the pretentious, like, former film student in me that likes the fact that a movie about racism is shot in black and white.
Mm-hmm. So there's no shades of gray at all in it. It's like Sin City. Just you're either black or you're white.
Well, that brings us to the episode of Star Trek.
Oh, yes.
Let that be your last battlefield, where there are two guys, each of which are, half of them are black and half of them are white, and they hate each other so much. Lokai is chasing the other guy whose name I forget, and like halfway through.
Is this original series?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So they literally were painting them black and white.
Yes. There was a guy who was
black. In blackface. Yeah.
Well,
half blackface
and half whiteface.
Oh, but it was the
just like there's a line sides? Down the middle, and it was opposite sides.
Yeah.
He's black on the left side. I'm black on the right side. Or, you know, that sort of thing. So
nice.
That's
and all camel toe on both sides
in their little jumpsuits.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that kind of was like a statement on how stupid racism is.
Yeah.
And very effectively done for the time, I would say.
I remember exactly like they're hating each other, and like you're watching this science fiction thing. You're a kid, mm-hmm. and you're like, yeah, they totally hate each other. And then they get to the point, he's like, "What? Well, why do you hate each other?" And he's like, well, isn't it obvious? And the Enterprise crew kind of looks around. They're like, I don't know what you're talking about. He is black on the left side. I'm black on the right side. Mm-hmm. And they, okay, racism.
You think Spock would have noticed that right away.
Yeah. But
whatever.
You'd think he would have. Yeah, he's a logician after all.
Well, yeah, he should understand that kind of difference could lead to hate. But maybe he doesn't mm-hmm. think that it's logical, so he ignores it.
True.
That's my problem with old school Spock. Old school Spock doesn't seem to have read Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Like he's got the logic down, but then he goes, oh, it's illogical, so I'm just going to ignore that it happens. Like,
you know what? The guy on the right has a total muffin top.
Oh, yeah.
The unfortunate, like, you know, not very forgiving spandex of the time.
They are aliens. Maybe that's their genitals.
There you go. His genitals are on the left side. My genitals are on the right side.
How about milk, Torin? We didn't talk about Harvey Milk.
I love milk on my cereal, on a bowl of banana slices, maybe.
Okay, all right.
But I also watched this film, which had I don't know if there was any milk in it. I was looking for milk.
Except for the man named
Except for the man Harvey named milk. Harvey Milk. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Precisely.
So I was hoping that it would be a little more about the dairy industry. Mm-hmm. 2008 American biographical film based on the life of gay rights activist and politician Harvey Milk, played by Sean Penn with a bunch of prosthetics on his face.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which were well done.
Yeah, sure.
Who was the first openly gay person to be elected to public office in California.
In San Francisco.
He kissed James Franco on the lips. Mm-hmm. Right on the lips.
Yeah.
They get right into it right at the beginning of the movie.
Who doesn't want to kiss James Franco right on the lips?
Oh, me. I don't.
And that was...
Are you telling me if James Franco walked into this room and said...
No, I would, but I don't want to.
Oh, okay.
If you're compelling me to,
no,
then
James
I
Franco,
will.
If James Franco walked in the room and said...
Kiss me.
I will kiss any one of you.
Sure.
I'd be lined up.
I would kiss him, but not after he kisses Joe.
Yeah, exactly. Don't have to go last.
Because that's gross.
Yeah.
That was his first man kiss, and he texted Madonna and said, I had my first man kiss, and she said, congratulations.
Uh-huh.
Sean Penn did.
Oh, Sean Penn did.
Yeah. Oh, that's a little trivia. That's a little behind-the-scenes trivia.
Yeah. That didn't happen on screen.
Harvey Milk, when he did it back in the 70s, didn't text Madonna and say, I had my first man kiss.
No.
So he had his first man kiss in 2008.
I guess you're going to have your first man kiss. I mean, that's a hell of a
man kiss to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. You can do a lot worse than that.
James Franco
is thinking to himself, nah, Sean Penn. Who's getting the losing end of this equation?
Josh Brolin from No Country for Old Men.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Was
and James Brolin's son.
Who's James Brolin?
He's married to Barbara Streisand.
That sounds boring.
Mm-hmm.
He played the kind of like sometime political peer, other times political adversary.
Yes.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yes.
It's politics.
And spoiler alert: Josh Brolin shoots him several times.
Dead.
Dead.
Yes.
Mr. Milk. Gets killed at the end.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't...
Based on a true story.
Yeah, in real life, the city councilor that killed Milk use the Twinkie defense, right?
That's right. This was the origin of the Twinkie defense, whereby
his blood sugar was so out of whack.
Yeah,
that
Josh Brolin
know.
Was not eating properly. Not Josh Brolin, but whoever the
counselor
White, I believe his name
Dan
was.
Dan White.
He was not eating properly because he was depressed, and so therefore it was a chemical imbalance, and so he couldn't be held responsible for his actions. But that did not go over.
These guys totally should have run for president and vice president, because then they would have been the Milk White platform. The Milk White ticket.
The Milk White.
The White Milk platform?
The White Milk. Milky White.
Milky White.
Milky
both,
White.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised that there weren't a lot of homo milk jokes.
In a very serious drama pic about the murder of a gay activist?
There was a bunch of, there were jokes. There were jokes in there. It was all like banter between the... Especially the thing I noticed... During the movie, a large amount of the homosexual portrayed characters were all kind of tight shirts, very muscly. And I mean, I guess this is just Hollywoodism, but at the end, they showed the real life characters that the actors were based on. They were just normal looking.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess that's kind of the way that it goes in Hollywood.
Well, because people who are kind of just normal looking don't usually become professional actors. You kind of have to either be, generally speaking, either really good looking... Or you have to be a quote-unquote character.
Right.
Right, like a Steve Buscemi.
Or a guy who plays the Rhino in Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, a Philip Seymour Hoffman or a Paul Giamatti, if you will.
That's the guy.
Yeah, that's who you're thinking of.
Homo milk, everyone. Homo milk.
If only you'd written it.
Kevin, Boys Don't Cry.
I've seen Boys Don't Cry, but before I saw Boys Don't Cry, I saw a documentary called The Tina Brandon Story.
Oh, right.
Which was the documentary on which Boys Don't Cry is based.
Yes.
Much like Ali is the movie based on the documentary When We Were Kings.
Oh.
And that boxing movie, the documentary, is far superior. And in my opinion... In this case, the documentary is far superior as well.
Now, why do you base a drama film on a documentary about a real thing instead of creating a drama film based on the real thing and skipping that step?
The stories don't necessarily get told until the documentary gets out there and people go, oh shit, this is a pretty compelling story. Let's make it into a movie.
All right.
People don't like to see documentaries, so they like to make dramas out of them and make them successful and win like lots of Oscars and whatnot. But the Tina Brandon story, the thing that makes it so chilling, the reason that this is unbelievable, that it's so incredible, is because they do first-person interviews with basically everybody who was involved. They do a first-person interview with the girl that was... Has anybody here not seen Boys Don't Cry?
I've seen it.
I've seen it, but maybe someone who's listening to this podcast might not have.
Okay, well, this movie's like 10 or 15 years old, but if you don't want to hear spoilers about Boys Don't Cry, you know, fast forward 30 seconds or whatever... But the girl who's dating him when she thinks he's a boy is interviewed in the documentary. The girl who was dating him as a boy's mother was interviewed in this documentary. And the three men, the two guys who murdered him are interviewed in the first person in this documentary. And one of them is totally torn up about it, and it's totally obvious. And the other one is utterly unrepentant and couldn't care less.
Right.
Wow.
That's the part that I found the most fascinating by far, is you actually get the story from the mouths of the people who perpetrated the crime, and then they completely rationalize their actions. It's so, basically like, she was asking for it. Like, what did she expect? Pretend to be a boy. When we find out that she's a girl, we gotta rape and kill her. What does she expect? Yeah. I mean, what did she think was gonna happen? Like, literally, he's looking at the camera going, what did she think was gonna happen when we found out? Of course we're gonna rape and kill her. And he's just like, what the? And of course, when Boys Don't Cry came out, I knew the whole story. But I'm watching the Tina Brandon story, and I don't know how this is going to end.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So when they get to the part where, you know, he is raped and killed, and these guys are basically explaining the whole thing and talking about what they did and why they did it, I'm just like, my brain is exploding. I'm like, what is going on? I remember being halfway through the movie going, I wonder when they're going to interview Tina Brandon about his take on all this. I actually had that thought in the middle of his movie.
Torin, there's a lot of hate in the X-Men movies.
Yes,
and comics.
In comics and animated TV shows.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best cultural examples of hate to hold up for kids because it's a different thing. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Like it's a metaphor. No,
it's a great metaphor. Like, and as a kid, you read it and you go, you're right. It is wrong to hate somebody just because they're different.
But also mm-hmm. you want to have superpowers. So you have that superpower yeah, fantasy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you can easily put yourself in their place, right? Yeah. Even though
which
they're
is
different.
Kind of the point.
So you can, exactly. So you can feel the effect of people hating them for that, which then is very easy, I think, to translate over to being hated for other things right. that aren't your fault and aren't actually bad.
And especially as a teenager, you have that you are going through all those hormonal changes, so you kind yeah. of feel like an outsider, mm-hmm. and Wolverine is an outsider, so you identify with him.
Right.
And you,
you
wish, you,
wish
had,
you had claws.
And you
so
wish
badly.
You had claws. So you could slash out at the people who are persecuting you.
You could slash tires. You could key cars. You could claw cars.
You could slow motion cut through a shotgun that's pointed at you in a bar.
Yeah. There's literally decades where the entire plot of the X-Men comics revolves around
persecution.
Just persecution and being hated
yeah.
for being mutants.
And several of the movies.
The entire first movie revolves around Magneto and his... I'm going to turn everybody into a mutant so they can't hate us.
Yep.
Well, you know what I like about X-Men 2 is you've got those mutants who have the physical deformities, who have an even bigger problem, and they kind of mm-hmm. like hate right. other mutants
the
who
Morlocks.
Don't have... Yeah, like the Morlocks, who kind of got a chip on their shoulder about, you know, the mutants that can stay on the surface, right? right? Yeah. And they have to all go underground.
Why does Scott Summers have to look so good?
Yeah, why do all the X-Men have to be so damn good looking, right?
So I would like to leave off with something that Fred Bremer, friend of the show, found mm-hmm. for me in the book Mistakes Were Made But Not By Me. It's a book by Carol Tavares and Elliot Aronson. It's about cognitive dissonance, confirmation bias, and other cognitive biases. So it's
I don't
about
know
ways,
what that means.
It's about ways your own brain can trick you.
No, it doesn't apply to me.
Okay. Yeah, that never happens mm-hmm. to you. When you enter the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles, you find yourself in a room of interactive exhibits designed to identify the people you can't tolerate.
Uh-huh.
The familiar targets are there. Blacks, women's, Jews,
Joes.
Gays.
Did you say Joes?
There are
black
no Joes.
Black women, Joes?
If you're going to go to the Museum of Tolerance, I will send them a photo of me.
Okay, great.
But also short people, fat people, blonde female people, disabled mm-hmm. people, etc.
Right.
You watch a video on the vast variety of prejudices designed to convince you that everyone has at least a few, mm-hmm. and then you're invited to enter the museum proper through one of two doors. One is marked prejudiced, and the other is marked unprejudiced.
Mm. Uh-huh.
The latter door is locked in case anyone misses the point, but occasionally some people do. When the authors
and
were...
like, oh, fuck you. This exhibit is stupid. I'm leaving.
When the authors were visiting the museum one afternoon, they were treated to a sight of four Hasidic Jews pounding angrily on the unprejudiced door, demanding to be let in.
Right, but I mean, but is it true that everyone is prejudiced?
It is.
Everyone is prejudiced.
It's built into human beings that you think less of others, people who are different. You don't necessarily
right, but
hate them.
But I think less of dumb people. Is that a prejudice?
Well, the pre part is important. If they are dumb and then you
how
don't
do you
like
find
them,
out if they're dumb?
When they drag a guy behind a truck for a mile and a half?
Then you're that's not prejudice. That's just Judas.
All right.
That's judging.
Okay.
You're allowed to judge. You just can't prejudge. You can't say, that guy's got blonde hair, so I hate him.
If I don't prejudge anybody, then I'm not prejudiced.
Right, but the thing
so
is,
it
that,
is impo-
so you say you want to go through the door that's locked.
But I don't necessarily believe that I prejudge people.
Sounds like you need a visit to the Museum of Tolerance.
I prejudge them. I am prejudiced.
Oh
my God!
Catch 22.
It's such a weird feeling to know you're alive. It's such an awful feeling. You're dying inside, and when you wake up, startled to say, I hope I don't go crazy today. It's such a bad feeling, an ominous feeling, a feeling you know that we'll be back when the week is new. And we'll have more gross facts for you. And you'll have things you want to hear about. We will too.
Caustic Soda was recorded by Mike Leeson during a botched cryonics procedure. To comment on episodes, make donations, and for links, images, videos, and show notes, visit causticsodapodcast.com. Rate and review us on iTunes. Visit us on Facebook, tweet us on Twitter at Caustic Podcast, email us at info@causticsodapodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
Boop, 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 boop,
He's putting his headphones on. Oh, we got the signals.
There you go. But the backup? Is the backup being recorded?
Yeah, he gave me that backup signal before he gave me the prime.
Yeah, that's what made me suspicious.
A little suspicious. You better go out there and check.
Uh-huh.